is Project Prospects, a podcast of 2009's Top 10 Prospects. I'm Todd Kreiner, here with Adam Foster at the Foster Residence. This is being brought to you by TicketCity.com, and with the help of Jonathan Mayo's input on MILB.com. Anything you'd like to start out with, Adam?
Are you nervous, Todd?
No.
Alright, whatever. Yeah, we're cycling around with hosts because Adam Loberstein and Pat Hennessy live a little too far away. It was kind of hard for me to bring another person onto the podcast who isn't named Adam, but you'll get over it and I'll get over it. So how about we get to it, Todd?
Let's do it.
So Todd, he does a little fancy baseball and stuff. He's a big prospect guy. He's excited to be on for this one. And really, the whole point of this podcast is to convince you why the 10 players who I put in my 2009 top 10 prospect list, trying to predict it a year in advance, why these guys are worth your time, why you should know their names. And Todd, what attracts you about David Price?
Oh, what's there not to like? He's a lefty, he's tall. He's, you know, he just looks athletic, like an athlete. You know, Vanderbilt, he had a great career there. He's team leader. Number one draft pick. I think he's going to rise up for Tampa Bay pretty fast. What do you think?
Yeah, Price was pretty much predicted. Everyone talks about to go number one overall,
right,
about a year ahead of his draft, and he lived up to every expectation. He only pitched, it was less than 100 innings his sophomore year. Then his junior year, he comes on strong, threw 133 really good innings, and he was the guy I decided to go with as my number one prospect for my 2009 projected list, just because he does seem like such a sure bet as the number one overall pick. As you mentioned, he has the body type. He has a fastball, according to Jonathan Mayo's report, that can touch 95 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Good movement. It's a plus pitch. His next best pitch, which also projects to be plus, is a slider that can go from 84 to 86 miles an hour. He also throws a slurve and a changeup. And the criticism that report says is that his arm action doesn't always match with his changeup and fastball. He drops down a little bit more with his changeup, but that's about the biggest criticism I can think of for Price right now.
Not much there.
Some people are hesitant to really get high on him yet because he hasn't pitched professionally during the regular season yet. He threw a lot of innings during his junior year. He had some outings where he threw like upwards of 130 pitches, which isn't quite as scary in college because you're not throwing as many breaking balls. Right. But the Rays decided to take it easy with him. They sent him on to instructional leagues rather than push him to like high A or anything.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like he's going to be starting the season in Double A next year with the Montgomery Biscuits. He'll get to collect some Biscuits merchandise.
That sounds nice. I noticed on his stats that his whip went up from 06 to 07 from 0.83 to 0.95. Do you make anything of that?
You're talking about pretty...
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good either way, I guess, yeah.
You don't hear about pro pitchers having a walks and hits per inning under one very often.
It's unheard of. Yeah.
And college is just as hard to replicate. I don't see anything wrong.
That's all I could find.
Well, one thing I did, we're talking about Price a little more than we'll talk about some of these other guys, just because he is the number one. I think there might be some people who say, yeah, well, Lou Cochevar, he was a number one overall pick.
Yeah.
He was an exceptional pitcher out of college. He hasn't been the kind of guy who we could ever see as a number one overall prospect.
Yeah.
Why should we think David Price could be? So what I did is I went and did a little research on Price's junior year at Vanderbilt, Hochevar's junior year with Tennessee, and Justin Verlander's junior year with Old Dominion. And pretty much what I found from this analysis is that Price was head and shoulders above the rest of these guys. It's really not even that close. Price's strikeout rate was approximately 38% of the batters he faced his junior year. Hochevar was 32%. Verlander about 32.7. Then you look at walk rates. Price was around 6%, which is pretty good. Hochevar was 11%, which is a sign to be cautious.
Yeah.
I guess some people didn't see that sign. And then Justin Verlander was 9.3%, also kind of high. Price only gave up 3 home runs in 133 innings last year. It's just phenomenal. That's a Chin-Ming Wong caliber home run rate. Hochever gave up 9, kind of a lot. Verlander gave up 8. We talked about the whips before. Price was at .95. Hochever was 1.13. Verlander 1.26. So far from a spotless junior year for Verlander, who had the projection, of course, has gone on to live up to it. I think Price compares a lot more favorably to Verlander than he does Hochever. But I think Price has more potential than Justin Verlander.
That sounds like a pretty good assessment at this point. I agree.
So that's the kind of guy we're talking about. Hopefully we've sold you on why we think David Price is going to be the number one prospect in 2009 in all of baseball. The only thing that really could change that in my mind would be if he manages to pitch more than the rookie allowable maximum innings next year, which could happen. Tampa Bay kind of has established a reputation for moving its pitchers along slowly, but also under its current front office, it hasn't had any kind of pitcher like Price, so there really isn't a precedent for how quickly he'll be promoted. I would be surprised if he isn't in AAA by the end of next year, and I think he's a guy who's likely going to get a September call-up.
Yes, I agree.
At number 2 overall, I had Clayton Kershaw, a high school pitcher from the 2006 draft.
Right.
What can you say about Kershaw, Ty?
Another good solid lefty. He's turning 20 this March. Looks to be pretty solid. what it was his assessment?
Yeah, Kershaw's he's a power pitcher.
Yeah.
He's a guy who I think he can get his fastball up in the mid-90s. I had a chance to meet him at the Futures game. He really kind of blew me away with how wise he is for his age. He really understands the game. He's committed to learning the game. We have a picture of him on our homepage. We've had it every once in a while. Some people comment he looks a little bit like Oral Hershiser. He's also a Dodger. And really, when I look at minor leaguers, any starting pitcher who can compile a strikeout rate of over 30%, strikeout over 30% of the batters he faces, over 100 innings, there's something very special about that pitcher, especially when he's doing it in low A as a 19-year-old. Right. And that's one thing Kershaw's been able to do. He struck out 31.3% of the batters he faced last year, which was his first full pro season. He reached double A in his first year as a pro, which is practically unheard of. He could be someone like Phil Hughes, who you see in the big leagues prior to his 21st birthday. I think that's pretty special.
Right.
Another thing I thought was really interesting about Kershaw is he walks a lot of batters. It's not really typical for a pitcher of his caliber to end up walking a lot of guys. It says that he still is working on his arsenal. He walked 12.9% of the batters he faced last year. So if you look at him and you look at his whip, he had a 1.27, which isn't spectacular. It doesn't blow you away. But then you look and you see that he gave up 89 hits and walked 67 batters. So that means approximately 43% of the batters who reached off of him were getting on via the walk.
Yeah.
So if he can get his walks, if he can cut them down to a respectable level, all of a sudden he's the untouchable future ace that a lot of people see him becoming.
Yeah, it's great keeping the hits down. I noticed his numbers, took a hit a little bit when he moved up to double A, but obviously, you're pointing out how young he is, and that I'm sure speaks for that a lot. His ground ball went down a little bit when he moved up, about 10%. Strikeouts went down a little bit, but
his strikeouts stayed pretty similar. What was it, like about 30?
Strikeouts per plate appearance went down about 5%.
Right, but still, he's maintaining a rate over 25% as a 19-year-old in double A. And one thing I did for a little more research on Clayton Kershaw is I did talk about his walk rate before and how that's something that makes me a little cautious. In my write-up with my column on this, I talked about, he might only be a number 2 starter if he can't figure out how to command his stuff better, but it's not every day you hear about a teenager who might only be a number 2 starter.
Right.
But what I did is I looked at Clayton Kershaw's walk rate between high A and double A, or low A and double A, actually, and was 12.9%. So then I went and looked at Yovani Gallardo, Phil Hughes, Tim Lincecum, Jabba Chamberlain, and Clay Buchholz when they were at similar levels, albeit different ages. Mm-hmm. So Kershaw, once again, 12.9% walks last year. Gallardo, at similar levels, had an 8.4% walk rate. Phil Hughes, 6.2, the best command of this group. Tim Lincecum, 10.4. That's a small sample with him using high A and triple A. Jabba Chamberlain, 8.2. Clay Buchholz, 6.6. So what I was telling you earlier is Kershaw's pretty much a standard deviation away from all of these guys in terms of his walk rate. Granted, he's the youngest. Phil Hughes was about the same age, though. So he still has time to kind of iron out those kinks.
Right.
But he's not really a sure thing number one, as if anyone is, until he can get those walk rates down.
Yeah, he's going to have to if he's going to stick, for sure. Be a top-of-the-line starter. How about Jacob McGee, number three?
Jacob McGee, as you commented, wound out our top three of all left-handed pitching prospects.
Yes, yes.
McGee is a guy I've gotten to interview a few times. He really impressed me with his take on the game. And he's someone who kind of has flown under the radar in that he was a fifth-round pick in 2004. And how excited can you get about a fifth-round pick? You don't hear about too many of those guys materializing into elite big leaguers. And we're telling you, by putting McGee at number three on this list, that we think he has a high chance of being that kind of elite big leaguer. And I've talked to Jake about it a few times. He was about 6'3", 190 pounds in high school.
Wow.
Relatively thin, but he had really big shoulders, and he's filled out since then. Mm-hmm. He's up to 245 pounds.
Wow.
So he's put almost 50 pounds, and you hear about guys who mature late like that. One that comes to my mind right away is Evan Longoria. Uh-huh. He wasn't highly coveted as a major league prospect out of high school. Then he added a bunch of weight, matured into his frame. All of a sudden, he goes from junior college to Long Beach, becomes one of the top college players in the nation, all of a sudden one of the top prospects in the nation, and mm-hmm. he's a guy who I think you're going to be hearing a lot about at the big league level soon. So I would kind of compare McGee to Longoria, except McGee decided not to go on to college. I think if McGee had gone on to college, he would be eligible for the 2008 draft, and he would probably be the best pitching prospect in the country ahead of Brian Mattis, who we'll get to later. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy who I wouldn't put much stock into where he was drafted, what kind of bonus he signed for, because he's matured so much in the big leagues. And that's one thing that I think is really noteworthy with him. Along with maturing into his frame, he's also improved upon his arsenal. In high school, he was mainly a fastball pitcher who threw in the low 90s. Now he throws in the mid to upper 90s. His changeup's getting better. He has a good slurve. He's a lefty who throws a slurve as well. Or he throws a slider, and he has kind of a curve.
Oh.
Primarily uses, he's getting more into the slider mode. But he's a guy who's really learning to make his changeup a bigger part of his game. He told me before, if he threw 100 pitches his first year in the big leagues, probably only 10% of them would have been his changeup. Now he's working on getting that closer to 20%.
Yeah, and he has good control, too, as you were talking about before. Walked very few, even after he moved up to Double A. So that's
right, and he had that blemish in his first start in Double A. It will kind of throw you off.
Right.
In Double A, he walked 13 batters in 23 innings. Well, six of those, I believe, came in his first Double A start.
Yeah.
And after that, he was mainly walking two or three. He also made some starts in the playoffs where he didn't walk many batters either. So you might look at that 13% walk rate in AA and say, no, he doesn't have good command. Well, when he was in high A and he spent more time there, his walk rate was 8.3%, which is pretty respectable. That's right in line with, I believe, Giovanni Gallardo when he was at those levels. Mm-hmm. And Gallardo's another guy who wasn't drafted in the first round. I believe mm-hmm. he was a second rounder. And he really matured and right about the same time as McGee did. Maybe McGee started showing a little bit earlier. So McGee's someone you're going to hear more and more about. As his changeup keeps getting better in his arsenal, I think he's a great candidate to be in the top three overall prospects entering 2009.
Sounds good. Matt Wieters, number four. Coming out of Georgia Tech, tall catcher. Got off to a slow start last year, but then he really turned it on the second half. He's a switch hitter. Would you say his height is a concern at all, and his knees being a catcher? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think there's a reason why you don't see too many tall catchers in professional baseball. Right now you have Joe Mauer, who I believe has grown 2 inches since he made it to the big leagues.
That's unbelievable.
He was 6'4 during his rookie year. Now he's 6'6.
Gosh.
And there's lots of talk they might have to move him off the position. So it is hard for a guy like that being in a crouch and catching the balls in the dirt. Mm. I went and saw Matt Wieters play twice last year against Duke when I was living in North Carolina. And I really focused in on his defense. I heard that his bat was already advanced enough where that was going to make him a first-round draft pick. But I wanted to watch his defense. He closed for Georgia Tech for a little while. He's a guy who can throw in the 90s.
Great
so
arm.
He has the arm.
Cannon, yeah.
But I watched his footwork closely and tried to observe his athleticism and see how comfortable he was there, especially on breaking pitches when he's having to get stuff in the dirt. And I don't know a ton about evaluating catchers, but he didn't look awkward back there. He looked pretty comfortable to me. He wasn't having pass balls left and right. Like, it wasn't a disgrace. I think at this point right now, it's hard for me to understand arguments where people say that Wieters isn't going to be able to play catcher professionally because he doesn't have the defensive skills. I think it's more people being apprehensive because he's so tall.
Uh-huh.
And granted, he's still going to have to prove that he can catch in the upper minors, but right now I don't see any major red flags as to Wieters moving off the position.
Yeah, Mayo seems to think that he's going to stick also in his description here on MILB. But yeah, he's already a polished hitter. Definitely something to look forward to there.
Yeah, and he's a switch hitter who also hits for power from both sides of the plate. I'm not sure about his contact ability from both sides, but I've seen him hit from both sides, and he's impressive. I got to see him play again when he went to play UNC, and he was roping the ball there one day. I wrote about him. I read it for the column, Washhammer Stadium. Wind was blowing out. He hit the ball into a jet stream. It carried forever, and it was a line drive home run, one of those ones where you're just like, whoa, did that just happen?
Right, right.
He has a really impressive bat. I think he's someone who you'll probably see start at high A next year. He's another guy who hasn't played regular season professional ball yet. He did play in Hawaii, where he wasn't a dominant hitter, but that is a league that favors pitchers, and I think he put up a respectable line. He's someone who does a good job walking. There's Morgan Foster in case any of you guys miss him. Wieters is also a guy who has a really good plate approach where he could potentially walk more than he strikes out in the big leagues, which is a valuable asset for any big leaguer.
Yeah, for a catcher too, that'd be huge.
And I also think that will allow him to transition well to professional ball. So we'll see how that goes next year. This year. All right.
Yeah, that's all right. Pedro Alvarez, a guy that I'm especially interested in being an owner, also out of Vanderbilt with David Price. He's a third baseman. He's got this unbelievable, you know, potential. He's got all kinds of, all the tools, well-rounded hitter. Maybe D, though. What's your concerns with him on his defense right now?
I haven't seen him play much defense. I got to watch him play one game that was televised last year, but I didn't get a good take on his defense. Mayo's report talks about he might have to move positions because his range is somewhat limited at third base. People also talk about him being somewhat overweight last year. I don't know if there's much truth to that. I'd imagine that if he had any kind of weight stuff last year, and granted we're talking about overweight for a professional athlete, where it's probably like maybe 3 or 4 pounds of baby fat. I'm sure he's gotten rid of it by now. But there are people who talk about because of his range he might have to move to first base or maybe the outfield. My take is still that his bat is so special that it's not going to matter where he plays. He was the best college hitter in the country last year as a sophomore. He's probably going to be the number one overall pick next year. There's a very good chance. Even like David Price, he was such a good talent. He was so good compared to the rest of the pack that even if he had insane bonus demands, he was still probably going to go number one overall. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see the same with Alvarez. That would make it back-to-back number one overall picks for Vanderbilt.
Yes. Wow.
I don't think that's ever happened before. And Alvarez has had 512 NCAA at-bats to his name so far. He's hit 40 home runs in those 500 college at-bats.
Wow.
Granted, they're playing with the Lumen and all that, but he's one of the premier power hitters in college right now. He's also an exceptional contact hitter. He's one of those guys who might only need a year in the minors, kind of like Alex Gordon, before he's ready to play full-time in the big leagues. And I think his ceiling rivals Alex Gordon's, rivals Evan Longoria. This could be the best third baseman in baseball 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah, he's listed 6'2", 225 on Vanderbilt's website. Sounds, maybe he gained a little bit of weight, but I'm sure he's he's still pretty solid. Sounds like pure power hitter from New York, New York.
And Alvarez, really, if we wanted to try and do a 2010 top prospect list, Alvarez is a guy who you can expect to be the number one prospect, perhaps, in 2010. He's that kind of high-ceiling talent.
That's good news for me. Right. Travis Snyder. He's a right fielder on the Blue Jays. What's your take on him?
Snyder's a guy who kind of seemed like have a bit of a bad rep with the scouting community sometimes just because his body type.
Right.
He's about 5'11", 245 pounds.
Yeah, that's a big boy.
But it's not Chubbs. He's just very, very strong. I think if he was a first baseman, people wouldn't be as fast to criticize him. It sounds like he's similar size almost to Prince Fielder. I know his body type gets compared to Matt Stairs, but the bottom line with Travis Snyder is he's the best power-hitting prospect who's established himself in the minor leagues right now. I think a case can be made that his bat is just as valuable, if not more valuable, potentially, than Jay Bruce's. Granted, Bruce had a huge year in his third full season as a professional this year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Snyder still needs to make that jump. He still needs to prove that he can do it in high A and double A and triple A and the big leagues. But he got a start on that in the Arizona Fall League. He played this year as a 19-year-old, one of the younger players in the league, and more than held his own. He was an excellent hitter. I had a chance to see him play a few times when he was there, had a chance to talk to him. He hit one ball, I swear, it was 475 feet. He's one of these guys in batting practice who can just put on that show. And he's also a pretty good contact hitter. Even though he strikes out a lot, I noticed in his approach he commits himself to the pitch fairly early. He's not waiting back on it, and that's, I think, where he gets his power. And he really springs and unloads on the ball. So I think you're going to see more strikeouts out of him than your typical hitting prospect. He might strike out 23-24% of the time, but that's because he has his load time set up so that he's deciding if he's going to swing or not right away. He has the pitch recognition to get away with it, and that's what I think leads to a lot of his power. This is a guy who could be a better hitter than Billy Butler. You're probably going to see him move to DH. Still, he has the upside, and he has to prove it in the upper minors. But if there was a hitter to gamble on who's established in the minors right now, Travis Snyder's the guy.
Yeah, 398 OBP with Lansing A-ball this year. It's on away games. That was away.
Yeah.
331 batting average away. Sounds like he...
And his batting average on balls in play looks a little funky. What is it?
I
think it's down below there.
Let's see. I've got home away splits.
He's a guy who had a really high batting average on balls in play, and some people might see that as he got lucky because his line drive rates aren't that high.
Uh-huh.
But like I was saying, with his load and his trigger and his swing, he's a guy who's going to commit early, and then he's going to swing really hard at the ball. So, and I think because he hits for a lot of power.
It's over 400.
Over 400, that, yeah. Which is insane for a guy who's an average runner, probably.
But I
think he's hitting so many fly balls opposed to line drives. Maybe those weren't escaping the ballpark too much at the beginning of the season, at least. So he doesn't have the high line drive rate that you would see correlate with that kind of batting average on balls in play. But he hits the ball so hard, and he's hitting a lot of fly balls, where I don't think it was too flukish. He might have a bit lower one next year.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at his month-by-month stats, I think in, like, August, he caught fire power-wise. He hit 7 home runs. Is that right?
Let's see, 617 slugging percentage. Yeah, 7 home runs. Yeah, that was his most at-bats in any month, too.
So you have Snyder. He finished huge in low A. He was the first high schooler ever taken with their first overall pick by the J.P. Riccardi regime in Toronto.
Yeah.
So Snyder's a guy, he's already proven himself in low A. He did a little bit of it in the Arizona Fall League. I'll be surprised if he isn't in double A by the end of next year. And he's a guy you're going to hear more about. You'll probably see in the Futures game next year. A really exciting hitter.
Yeah, it just turns 20 in February next month.
Yep.
Rick Porcello.
Now, Porcello is a guy who dropped in the draft because of bonus demands.
Right.
So if you didn't follow the draft closely, you're going to say, this guy was a 28th overall pick. I believe it was 28th. why are we talking about him so highly? It was because his agent was demanding Josh Beckett-like money.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't think Porcello is really that similar to, or I don't know yet if he's that similar to Beckett as far as the way he pitches, that's the kind of ceiling he has.
Mm-hmm.
And he pitched in the Northeast, so he didn't get to throw a lot in high school. People still think he's kind of a mystery, but from all his workouts, from his build, he projects to be a number one caliber pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
He still hasn't thrown a professional game. He signed kind of late, but have him around 6'5", 195 pounds.
Yeah, I can still fill in a little bit, too. Definitely.
Mayo talks about how he has the making to have, I think it was like 3 or 4 plus pitches, which is pretty amazing. If he has...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he has the possibility of 4 plus pitches. His fastball, which can, touch 95 miles an hour. Then he has a good above-average changeup. He has all sorts of stuff going on. Decent command. He's one of the minor leaguers I'm as excited to follow as anyone next year. He'll probably begin the year in low A, barring injury, and could blow minor league hitters away.
It looks like it. Yeah, he's got the stuff and the poise. Mike Moustakas.
Yeah, you got it correct.
All right.
Moustakas, another 2007 draft pick. He was taken 2nd overall out of Chatsworth High School, which also had Matt Dominguez, who I believe was 12th overall by the Marlins. So 2 first-rounders out of that high school, obviously has a reputable baseball program. And Moustakas is someone who I think might even have a higher ceiling than Travis Snyder.
Mm.
I'm not sure if his bat will be better, but he played shortstop his senior year in high school because Dominguez played third base, and he's a talented defender there.
Right.
A lot of people think that he'll have to move to third base ultimately, another range thing, or maybe even the outfield, maybe first base. Shortstop probably isn't his long-term position, but it gives you an idea if the Royals are still willing to try him at shortstop, what kind of athlete he is.
Oh, yeah.
He hit, I believe, 24 home runs and 95 or 96 at-bats his senior year in high school, which set a single-season California home run record.
Jeez.
So look out, Matt Clement. We have another guy with home run accolades coming out of high school. Clement, however, chose to go to college. So that's, you get an idea of Moustakas' ceiling there. Hits for a ton of power, was the number 2 overall draft pick. He's a guy who you should expect to soar through the minors, much like the 2005 outfielders in Jay Bruce, Justin Upton, and Cameron Maben have. He's someone to expect to progress quickly and really make a name for himself as one of the best hitters, hitting prospects in baseball.
Yeah, hopefully this scouting report by Mayo isn't too skewed. It says he homered 3 times in the game he was scouting.
Yeah.
Listed as a below-average runner. But it's a cannon for an arm, so definitely probably play third.
I believe our friends at Baseball America listed Mike Moustakas as having the strongest arm in the Royals system.
Wow.
Despite not being a pitcher.
That's amazing.
So Moustakas at number 8. Mm-hmm. Number 9, we're going to go with another 2007 draft pick. You may kind of be noticing a trend here where we have a lot of recent draft picks or guys who should be draft picks in 2008, and we were talking about this a little bit before, Todd, about how you're not seeing many 2005 guys on this list, and I think the reason for that, what I was thinking when I saw it is, you can read off maybe some of the projected graduations I have, and what Jay Bruce, Colby Rasmus, a lot of guys from 2005 are reaching the big leagues so quickly, they're performing so well, Jacoby Ellsbury, Mike Pelfrey's another guy from that draft list who's been brought along quickly. Most of the 2005 guys who project to be big leaguers and strong big leaguers are already in the big leagues.
Oh,
Troy
yeah.
Tulowinski, Ryan Braun.
Buck.
Alex Gordon, Ryan Zimmerman. All these guys are already up, so you might look at this list and be like, these guys are so young, it doesn't make any sense. But a lot of it has to do with that 2005 draft class being so good and already arriving on the scene.
Yep.
I can't see too many of the high-ceiling guys from that class still being in the minors next year. So you get another 2007 draft pick, number 9 on my list, and Jared Parker. And my little anecdote in my Parker write-up is I talked to a talent evaluator before the draft, before I knew much about Parker, and said, tell me why I should be excited about Parker. Who are some guys he compares to? And he said, Tim Lincecum, Roy Oswalt, he's that kind of talent. Take your pick of an undersized right-handed pitcher who throws hard.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what Jared Parker seems to be. He might be a little more polished overall than Rick Porcello just because he hasn't pitched in a cold weather environment as much.
Mm-hmm.
He's logged a little more high school innings. But he's another guy who just has a solid arsenal. He throws hard. He still hasn't made his pro debut, but he's a guy you expect to see in low A.
Yes, another great talent in the Diamondbacks system. Definitely.
So Mayo's report on him, he's a good combination of skills, a big fastball, two potentially good secondary pitches. He has clean mechanics, which is why a lot of people who say, well, he's undersized, he's only about 6'1", 180 pounds. Mm. He has the good clean mechanics that you want. He has outstanding command. So he's someone who we could see in low A next year, maybe even finish the year in high A.
Mm.
And I really wouldn't hold his height against him, just because he's that kind of high ceiling upside, which we're seeing discriminated against a little bit less now that guys like Tim Lincecum, Scott Kazmir, and Roy Oswalt have proved, Pedro Martinez before them, that you don't have to be 6'5" to be a professional pitcher.
Nope, they're definitely proven that theory wrong.
So between Porcello and Jared Parker, I think you have the two of the higher upside pitching talents in the 2007 draft. And because they're so polished and have so many potential above-average pitches, they're guys who could move quickly, and I'm comfortable projecting as potential top 10 prospects in 2009 just because their overall tool set, and hopefully we'll have some good quantitative analysis to back that up next year.
Sounds good.
Number 10 on the list, another guy you're kind of interested in.
That's right.
In Brian Mattis. For the University of San Diego Toreros.
West Coast Conference, that's right.
He's eligible for the 2000 draft, highly viewed as the number one pitching prospect for that draft.
Possibly number two pick, yeah. Tall lefty.
Yeah, yet another left-handed pitcher. If Pedro Alvarez winds up going number one, I wouldn't be surprised if Mattis goes number two.
Yeah.
According to BrewersFan.net, his fastball sits in the 89 to 92 range. I'm not sure when that report's from, but he could touch 94.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a guy who can get it up there in the low, mid-90s. When I saw him pitch against UC Davis a couple of years ago as a freshman, his command wasn't quite there with his secondary stuff, mm-hmm. but he had an amazing curveball. BrewersFan.net talks about his breaking ball, changeup potentially being his number one offering. But we're talking about a very advanced college pitching talent right here. I think an argument can be made that Mattis' sophomore year was better than David Price's sophomore year.
Wow.
But he also threw more innings, so we don't know if that's going to take a toll on him as a junior.
Mm-hmm.
But we have another amazing college pitching talent here, who I like more already than Luke Hochever. He could end up being one of these high-ceiling guys like Verlander and Price. Just got to see what he does his junior year and get a little more out of him.
Yeah, definitely. 10 strikeouts in 9 games. 10 or more strikeouts. 13 strikeouts in 3 games this last year, sophomore year. Definitely someone to keep an eye on.
Yep, so that fills out our top 10. Some honorable mentions, just you know who else we were thinking about. Bo Mills, Jason Hayward, Fernando Martinez, Chris Marrero, Josh Vitters, Bill Rowell, and Angel Villalona. Once again, the guys who I'm assuming will graduate, and that's why I didn't consider them for my 2009 projected top 10, are Jay Bruce, Colby Rasmus, Clay Buchholz, Evan Longoria, Jabba Chamberlain, and Cameron Maben.
Mm.
So you fantasy owners, hopefully you can use this advice to start getting on top of who some of the next big prospects will be. It's great having you on the show, Todd.
Hey, anytime. I enjoyed it.
This podcast was brought to you by the PayPal link in the upper right-hand corner of our website. Just kidding. Don't feel obligated to donate or anything. We are glad you listened. hope you had as much fun as we did.
Have a good one.
Talk to you soon.